up in heaven, meet the sweet rock and roll, my baby. Oh, my pretty baby, yeah, yeah. Well, let's get together, rock and roll with me. Well, if you got the money, I got the time. Let's go to time, I'm gonna spend my time, my baby. Oh, my pretty baby, oh, yeah. Well, let's get together, rock and roll with me.
Good morning, folks. You're listening to WGDR Plainfield, WGDH Hardwick, Central Vermont Community Radio at 91.1 FM and 91.7 FM on your dial. And happy Saturday, folks. It is Saturday morning here in Central Vermont. And my name is Amy, and this is Amy's Kids Show. And I am so excited to be here with you guys. I've got the chickens. I've got the frogs, the crows, all kinds of birds, all kinds of monkeys, apparently. I didn't even know we're here, but they were just hearing the song when I was coming on the air just now. So you never know who you're going to meet here at Amy's Kids Show. And boy, do I have a magical special show again today. It was just magical, so magical. I just have to tell you, I had some ideas for this week because, of course, it's Father's Day tomorrow. It's also the first day of summer. And I had this book, you know, that I found in Marshfield at a free library called The Anthology of Children's Literature. And it has almost every children's story, you know, that was written up to the time it was printed. Almost, of course, that would be impossible to have all of them. But it has so many. It's unbelievable. And so I really had no idea what to read today for a story. And I picked up this book. And I mean, it has everything in it, right? So who knows what I would find. And I just said, you know what? I'm really busy with my garden and the chipmunk keeps eating things and I'm running around trying to get a million things done. I don't have time to look through this book. I just want to open to the page and find the right story. I need the perfect story and I don't have time to mess around. So, you know, I opened the book and there it was. I can't believe it, guys. I opened right to the most perfect story. And it's actually a chapter from a book, a bigger book called By the Great Horn Spoon. And we're only going to read a chapter today, but it's called Saved by a Whisker. Saved by a Whisker, you know? It has to do with the gold rush, which has to do with, of course, sunshine, probably, if you think about gold and sun. But the real connection to this week's show is I then went to go find songs for dads, right, and fathers. And guess what? I've got a song called Father's Old Gray Whiskers, and when you hear the song about Father's Old Gray Whiskers and you hear the story, you're going to know, guys. This is like such magic, right? And of course, when we talk about fathers, we can also talk about role models, right? And we've been talking about role models for weeks on this show. So we're celebrating role models, and this story has two awesome role models that I know I followed just this morning. I'll tell you about that later if I have time. You know, role models teaching us how to live, guys. We are surrounded by amazing, beautiful, smart, just wonderful creatures just like you. Thanks for joining me.
If that diamond grass. Papa's gonna buy you a looking glass. If that looking glass gets broke, Papa's gonna buy you a billy goat. If that billy goat don't bowl, Papa's gonna buy you a garden bowl. If that garden bowl turn over, Papa's gonna buy you a dog named Rover. If that dog named Rover don't bark, Papa's gonna buy and cart. If that horse and cart fall down, you'll be the sweetest little one in town. Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Papa's gonna buy you a mockingbird. If that mockingbird can't sing, Papa's gonna buy you a diamond ring. If that diamond ring turns to brass, Papa's gonna buy you a looking glass. If that looking glass gets broke, Papa's gonna buy you a billy goat. If that billy goat don't bowl, Papa's gonna buy you a garden bowl. If that garden bowl turn over, Papa's gonna buy. Papa's gonna buy you a mockingbird. If that mockingbird can't sing, Papa's gonna buy you a diamond ring. If that diamond ring turns to brass, Papa's gonna buy you a looking glass. If that looking glass gets broke, Papa's gonna buy you a billy goat. If that billy goat don't pull, Papa's gonna buy you a garden bowl. If that garden bowl turn over, Papa's gonna buy you a dog named Rover. If that dog named Rover don't bark, Papa's gonna buy you a horse and cart. If that horse and cart fall down, you'll be the sweetest little one in
daddy. makes planes so they fly through the sky. That's what keeps your daddy up there so high. That's what keeps your daddy up there so high. That's what keeps your daddy up there so high. You're not afraid. Said, my daddy works at the place where they land. So you tell your mama, don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid.
My dad'll bring your daddy back home again. My dad'll bring your daddy back home again. My dad'll bring your daddy back home.
Is a Ricky Lee Jones song, and the first time I heard it, I knew immediately that she'd written it for her child, her daughter. And it says, I'm here, no matter what happens, we're together. Parents need to hear that message as much, or maybe even more, than the kids need to hear it. I think in a way, my kids have a stronger sense of, or I should say a stronger trust about the fact that we're together and we love each other and nothing's going to change that.
Pick you up.
go, and I'll be right there by your side. Even then, a whisper in the wind will call me to you in the night. I hear all the people of the world in my one bird's cry. See them tried every way they know to make their spirits fly. Can you see her? A moonlight in her eye, coming from under my wing. You were born to fly. That's the way it's gonna be, little darling.
Thank you. sign of weakness. Faced the fans, teams, and press with grace and style. And when he hit that ball, the crowd went wild.
Did you see Jackie Robinson hit that ball when he hit it? And that ain't all, he stole home.
Yes, yes, Jackie's real gone. 'Cause Jackie is a real gone guy.
It was in the morning, a sunny Saturday. We turned on the TV and on the couch we lay. We watched our favorite program and another couple shows. When our dad came in the room, folded arms and tapping toes.
He said, kids, turn off the TV now. There's lots of things to do. Your beds aren't made, the chores aren't done. The sun is shining too.
I said, oh, Dad, I'm busy now. I've got to watch this show.
I guess we should have listened, but how were we to know? 'Cause then he walked across the room and then he pulled the plug. He lifted up the television and skipped across the rug. He opened up the window and then we screamed, Dad, no! But he gave the thing a heave and we watched the TV go.
Dad threw the TV out the window.
I knew that things at our house would soon be changing fast.
Our dad looked out the window and he mumbled, my oh my. My brother looked out too and said, I'm gonna die.
That night after dinner when we went to watch the set, all we found was nothing. I said, how could I forget? My brother lay down on the floor and mumbled, what will I do?
I said, why don't you move away? He said, the same to you.
But then he told a joke. And I told two or three.
And the one about the elephants made Dad fall on his knees.
And Mom did her impression of a duck that couldn't fly.
That would have made you wet your pants and maybe even cry.
Because Dad threw the TV out the window. The window. I think he's finally cracked. Dad threw the TV out the window. I got a feeling that it isn't coming back.
I didn't really miss it, though some friends thought I was weird.
I didn't miss commercials and all the blood and guts and all the stupid shows my brother watched that drove me nuts.
But then one sunny Saturday, our dad could not be found. We looked high and low, and from his room we heard a sound. We ran into his room to see what it could be and found our father hiding there watching a TV. Now, really, you ought to be ashamed.
He said kind of sheepishly, I want to watch the game.
We picked up the TV and waltzed across the room and gave the thing a heave and waited for the boom.
We threw the TV out the window.
Hey guys, welcome back. So that was kind of a hilarious song. Do remember not to throw things out the window, especially heavy things like televisions. Fellow programmer and friend here, Willis J. Pratt, He's got a song that warns us about throwing TVs out windows and what kind of trouble that can get you into. But anyway, so if you doubt my advice on that, you can certainly listen to his song for some advice. But I do love that song because, you know, you've got your role model there, the dad, and, you know, the kids are going to follow him. And, you know, television is a role model, too, you know, and we can see good things on TV, like Jackie Robinson playing baseball. It sounds like he was a really good role model for people. You know, just some of the problem is we don't always see such great role models on TV. So we do have to be careful about what we're feeding our brains for role models, because we might just start copying that kind of stuff, right? And we want to be curious. We want to learn about the world, and TV would be a great way to do that, right? To travel to different places and different times and meet all kinds of new people and learn about things that even have happened. So many things have happened already that I have no idea about. I wasn't there. I would love to know more about it. And so we have to be curious if we're going to learn. And wouldn't it be great if TV helped us be curious like that? And then we could maybe, you know what a wonderful place the world is and how wonderful people really are, especially when we put our best foot forward, right? When we cooperate with the magic of the world and we do our part, we take care of things the best we know how, and then the pieces fall into place. Well, that's what our story is about today. We're actually going to travel to San Francisco in California, on the other side of North America from Vermont. and we've actually been to San Francisco on this show before. If you remember, Humphrey the whale had a little trouble in San Francisco Bay. Humphrey went swimming up the river. Remember the story we read a few months ago? And I'm actually back at the harbor. We have the same harbor sounds in the background right now. We're back at the harbor in San Francisco again. But this is a long time ago. Oh my, how long ago? 1849 is the year. And so this is an old story, and it's from a time before, you know, people could travel the way we could. There were no roads between Vermont or New England, because the boy in the story is from Boston. So he couldn't take a road from Boston, Massachusetts, over to California. In fact, he couldn't even take a train yet. They were still building trains, and you'll hear about that in the story. And so he had to take a boat with his friend, who's a butler, his butler, apparently, and they have to take a boat from Massachusetts and go down around South America and then back up, because there wasn't even a Panama Canal to cut through. So, you know, it took them 5 months to get from Boston to California. So this is where the story picks up, and let's hear what the description is here. It's called, it's by Sid Fleischman, is the author, and it's called, the book is called By the Great Horn Spoon, and we're only going to read one chapter. It says, this is a description. Here is a hilarious tall tale told with gusto and a zest for life. In 1849, the California Gold Rush was in full swing. As the ship, Lady Wilma, put out from Boston for San Francisco, two stowaways were aboard, young Jack Flagg, who wanted to gain a fortune for his impoverished Aunt Arabella. I think his aunt is going to lose her home, and so he has to, you know, make some money to save his aunt's home, or I guess aunt. They're from Boston, right? So his Aunt Arabella. And Praiseworthy is on board, too. Praiseworthy is his aunt's butler. And the butler has a bowler, white gloves, and a black umbrella. That's kind of how butlers usually dress. Long before the sidewheeler reached California, Praiseworthy had made himself indispensable to the captain, had captured a thief, and saved the cargo from ruin. In California, Praiseworthy really comes into his own, and the reader inadvertently learns a bit of history from the authentic background. And that's the part I like best about the story. So, here we go. This is one chapter from the book. It's called Saved by a Whisker. In his pea jacket and stocking cap, Jack felt 14 years old at least, maybe 15. He stood in the bow of the whale boat and watched the long wharf come closer. They bumped against the boat stairs, and Jack was the first out. His heart raced with the excitement of the moment. They had arrived, and he was ready to start digging.
"Not so fast, Master Jack," said Praiseworthy. "Don't forget your pick and shovel."
"And don't start digging up the streets," laughed Mountain Jim. "Folks might not appreciate it."
A hilltop telegraph had signaled the arrival of a side wheeler. That's the kind of boat they're in. And now it seemed as if all of San Francisco had turned out. The wharf was alive with men, women, and children, not to mention dogs, mules, and chickens. Seagulls flocked in the air like confetti. Weighted down with their belongings, Praiseworthy and Jack started along the wharf. There were barrels and boxes piled everywhere. Peddlers and hawkers and hotel runners mixed through the crowd and shouted at the newcomers.
"Welcome, boys! Welcome to the fastest growing city in the world! Flannel shirts for sale, flannel shirts, red flannel for your gents. They don't show the dirt.
Try the Neontic Hotel, the cleanest beds in town.
Horn spoons, you'll need them at the diggings, carved from genuine ox horn.
Stay at the Parker House, none better."
The wharf seemed a mile long and the noisiest place on earth. Jack was dazzled by what he saw. Tattooed islanders and East India sailors and silent Chinese with pigtails dangling behind them like black chains. There were Mexicans moving about to the jingle of their heavy silver spurs and Chileans in long serapes. There were mule skinners and businessmen. There were miners in jackboots and red flannel shirts with the mud of the diggings still in their beards. The city rang to the sound of hammers. Buildings were going up everywhere, and a sand dredger was pounding the air. Men stood in the doorways of the shops, ringing handbells.
"Auction, auction going on. Fresh eggs just arrived from Panama.
Step inside, gents. Chair roots and chewing tobacco.
Onions at auction, 50 bushels, just come in from the sandwich aisles. Also calomel pills, castor oil, and carpet tacks."
Jack gazed about at the street of wonders. There was a smell of mutton from the chop houses and a sizzle of hot grease from the oyster shops. Suddenly, Mountain Jim stopped short.
"Billy be hanged," he said, lifting his nose in the air. "Smell that?"
Praiseworthy nodded. "It's strong enough to knock a man down."
"Makes your mouth water, don't it?"
Not exactly, said Jack, trying not to breathe.
"It's bear meat, real California home cooking. Good luck in the diggings, boys. I'm going to follow my nose."
Following up the scent like a bloodhound, Mountain Jim crossed the street and turned into a restaurant. Before long, Mr. Azaria Jones dropped away, unable to resist the lure of the auction shops another moment. Praiseworthy and Jack continued along the boardwalk, which was hammered together mostly out of barrel staves, and reached the United States Hotel. Captain Swain had recommended it.
"A fine room, if you please," Praiseworthy said to the hotel clerk, "and I think a tub bath would be in order."
"Very good, sir," replied the clerk. He was a bald-headed man with thin strands of hair combed sideways from ear to ear. "That'll be $10 extra, each."
"What's that?" Praiseworthy scowled. "We don't want to bathe in champagne. Water will do, sir."
"Champagne'd be almost cheaper, gents. Water's $1 a bucket. Unless you want to come and wait until next November. Prices come down when it rains."
"We'll wait," said Praiseworthy with decision. In this part of the world, he thought, a man had to strike it rich just to keep his neck clean. He signed the register, and Jack gazed at the bearded miner, pacing back and forth across the lobby floor. He wore a floppy hat, and chestnut hair tumbled out on all sides like mattress stuffing coming loose. He kept glancing at the loud wall clock, as if every advancing second might be his last. Jack couldn't take his eyes off the man. Tucked in his wide leather belt were a revolver,
a horn spoon, and a soft buckskin bag. Gold dust, Jack thought. He must have just got in from the mines.
Ruination, the miner began to mutter. Ruination.
Praiseworthy blotted the register. How, he asked the clerk, does one get to the mines?
Riverboat leaves every afternoon at 4 o'clock from Long Wharf. Fare to Sacramento City is $25. From there, you take your way. You make your way to the diggings by stage, muleback or foot.
Jack shot a glance at Praiseworthy. $25 each? Why, they didn't have that much money. But the butler didn't so much as raise an eyebrow.
We'll be taking the boat tomorrow, he told the clerk.
Ruination, said the miner.
Come along, Master Jack, said Praiseworthy.
The walls of their room were lined with blood-red calico, and there was china matting on the plank floor. The window looked out on the shipping in the bay, the masts as thick as a pine forest. There were not only gold ships, but navy frigates and Chinese junks and the going and coming of longboats. But Jack was not interested in the view.
$50 just to get to Sacramento City, he said. We'll have to walk.
Good exercise, no doubt, but we haven't time for it, Praiseworthy said as he gazed out at the distant hills across the bay. Sacramento City was more than 100 miles upriver, he had heard, and the diggings in the foothills were beyond that.
Let me see. It took us 5 months to get this far, and it will take us another 5 months to get home. If we are to keep your Aunt Arabella from being sold out, oh, we have 2 months left. 2 months to fill our pockets with nuggets.
Jack found himself pacing back and forth like the miner in the lobby below.
Ruination, Jack said. We've come all this way, and now we're no closer.
Nonsense, said Praiseworthy. There was a pitcher half filled with water on the chest, and he poured a small amount into the washpan.
We'll be on tomorrow's riverboat, I promise you. Now then, I suggest we wash up as best we can, Master Jack.
Wash? Jack thought. There wasn't time to wash. How will we pay the fare? He insisted.
Let me see. We have $38 left. That's a start, isn't it? Of course, we'll have our room and meals to pay. But if I detect one thing in the air, it's opportunity. The sooner you wash, Master Jack, the sooner we can tend to our financial dilemma. Your Aunt Arabella wouldn't allow you abroad on the streets with dirty ears and sea salt in your eyebrows. And don't forget the soap.
Ruination, Jack muttered again. He might as well be home in Boston.
They washed and changed into fresh clothes, and Praiseworthy gathered up their white linen shirts. They needed a good starching and ironing. Praiseworthy had noticed a laundry sign a few doors from the hotel. It wouldn't do, he told himself, to see Master Jack turn into a ragamuffin. No, indeed. Miss Arabella would never forgive me. When they returned to the lobby, the shaggy miner was still there, pacing and muttering in his dusty beard. He glanced at Jack, a dark, sudden glance. And then the butler and the boy went out into the street. But as they ambled along the boardwalk, Jack began to realize that the miner was following them. Or so it seemed for a moment. Praiseworthy turned into the laundry, a mere wooden framework tacked with canvas, and set the bundle of shirts on the counter.
"How soon may we have these back, sir?" asked the butler.
"Very fast service," answered the laundryman. His pigtail bobbed as he bowed.
"How fast?"
3 months, unless there is a typhoon.
3 months? Typhoon? The man was mad, Praiseworthy thought, or perhaps it was the entire city.
We fully intend to leave by the 4 o'clock riverboat tomorrow.
Not possible, said the Chinese man, bowing and slipping his hands into his flowing sleeves. We send laundry to China. It come back 3-4 months, all wash, starch, iron, unless there is a typhoon. Take longer. No one do laundry here. Everything sky high. Cheaper sent to China. Praiseworthy picked up the bundle of shirts and gave Jack a look of modest defeat. Since we've managed without baths, I dare say we can do without starched shirts. Come along. They had hardly gone half a block when Jack saw the miner in the floppy hat once again behind them. The black pistol in his belt suddenly looked larger. But Jack said nothing. The miner could want nothing with them, nothing at all. He was still at their heels when the butler and the boy crossed the street. Now Jack was beginning to feel anxious, even a little scared. Finally, he looked up at Praiseworthy. "He's following us." "Who's following us?" asked the butler. "That miner from the hotel." "Stuff and nonsense. The streets are free to everyone." "But he's following us, Praiseworthy." "Nothing to fear in broad daylight, Master Jack." They continued along the sandy plaza, still looking for opportunity, and the miner marched right behind them. "Must be another madman," said Praiseworthy, turning. He stopped, and the miner stopped, and they stood face to face. "Sir," said the butler, "are you following us?"
"Ruination, I sure am."
"I'll thank you to go on your way, sir."
"No offense, gents," the miner said. "Been on the verge of breaking in on your conversation, but it didn't seem courteous."
It was hard to see his mouth for the fullness of his beard.
"They call me Quartz Jackson, and I just come in from the diggings. My fiancé's due in on the next stage any minute, coming up from the capital at Monterey. We ain't never met, but we writ a lot of letters, and that's just it."
"And that's just what?" said Praiseworthy.
"We're supposed to be getting married, but ruination! When she takes one look at me, she's going to think I'm a part grizzly bear."
He whipped off his floppy hat, and his dusty hair fell out on all sides.
"She'll get right back on the stage for Monterey. But shucks, I ain't such a bad-looking gent. Leastways, I wasn't when I went to the diggings. I'm just a mite growed over, you might say. Well, I've been tramping every street in town looking for a barber, but they all lit out for the mines. Don't seem to be anyone left here but the Cheap Johns."
"Cheap Johns?" said Praiseworthy.
"Auctioneers. Anyway, that's why I couldn't help staring at the lad here."
"Me?" said Jack.
"Why, that yeller hair of yours looks fresh from the barber shop, all cut and trimmed. I figured you must have flushed out a barber, and maybe you'd do Quartz Jackson the favor of leading me to him."
If Jack had feared the miner for a moment, he couldn't help smiling at him now. He liked the man.
"No, sir," he said. "I haven't been to a barber, unless you mean Praiseworthy."
"Praiseworthy?"
"At your service," said the butler. "It's true, I've been cutting Master Jack's hair, but only out of necessity." The miner's face, what could be seen of it, broke into a sunny smile. "I'd be much obliged if you'd barber me up, Mr. Praiseworthy. Name your price."
"Oh, but I'm not a barber, sir. I'm a butler."
"A what?"
I couldn't accept any money for merely..."
"Well, now, that's mighty white of you. Tell you what I'll do. I'll let you have all the hair you cut off."
Praiseworthy and Jack exchanged fresh glances. The man was some sort of lunatic after all. What earthly use did they have for the man's shorn locks? But it seemed wise to humor him, and Praiseworthy said, "I'll be glad to help you in your hour of need, sir. Consider it a modest wedding present." 20 minutes later, the miner was seated on a nail keg in a corner of the hotel porch, and Praiseworthy was snipping away with the shears. Quartz Jackson insisted that every lock be caught as it fell. Jack was kept busy holding a wash pan under Praiseworthy's busy scissors. It worried him that time was wasting and they were yet to make their boat fare. But he knew it would have been impossible for Praiseworthy to turn his back on a gentleman in distress, even a peculiar miner like Mr. Quartz Jackson.
"My, ain't the town growed, though," said the miner. "Must be all of 4,000 or 5,000 folks in the place. You gents figuring on going to the diggings?"
"We do indeed," said Praiseworthy.
"I come from Hangtown,
The boys have been locating a good lot of color up that way.
Color?
The yeller stuff. Gold. If you get up Hangtown way, tell them you're a friend of Quartz Jackson. Tell them I'll be coming home with my bride in a couple of weeks. Sure is nice of you to shear me this way. Would you mind trimming the beard while you're at it? Always itching. And I can hardly find my mouth to spit with. Jack, young Jack, a bit of sideburn is getting away in the breeze. Wouldn't want you to lose any.
Yes, sir, said Jack, catching the lock of hair.
Quartz Jackson's face began to appear, snip by snip, like a statue being chipped out of stone. When Praiseworthy had finished, the miner turned to look at himself in the hotel window pane, and he almost jumped out of his jack boots.
By the great horn spoon, he said. Is that me?
Quartz Jackson was obviously pleased.
Why, I'd forgot I was so young.
Quartz Jackson was a fine-looking gent at that, Jack thought. He had good teeth and an easy smile. Except for his revolver, his horn spoon, and his red flannel shirt, he hardly seemed the same man. But what did he expect them to do with the hair cuttings? Stuff a mattress?
Your fiancé will be very pleased, smiled Praiseworthy. Our congratulations on your forthcoming marriage, sir.
Much obliged, Praiseworthy. You saved me from certain ruination. The least I can do is learn you how to work a gold pan. Water boy, you there, fetch us a bucket of dew over here.
The miner paid for the water by taking a pinch of fine gold dust from his buckskin pouch. Jack was eager to get the hang of mining, and Quartz Jackson, peculiar or not, was clearly an expert.
Give me the wash pan, Jack, young Jack.
Jack handed over the tin pan, piled high with chestnut whiskers and trimmings. The miner wet them down with fresh water and began to swish the pan around.
Gold's heavy, he explained. Nothing heavier. Even the yeller dust sinks to the bottom if you keep working the pan, like this.
Then he handed the wash pan to Jack and taught him the motion. The water turned brown from the dirt and mud that gathered in Quartz Jackson's whiskers and hair. Finally, he poured off everything but a thin residue at the bottom of the pan.
Jack's eyes opened like blossoms. Gold dust.
Why, look there, the miner roared with laughter. The boy's panned himself some color. I figured I scratched enough pay dirt into my beard to assist out at about $14 an ounce. Since I give you the whiskers and all, the gold is yours.
Jack had never known a more exciting moment in his life. The grains of dust sparkled like yellow fire, and there was even a flake or two.
Half an hour later, while Quartz Jackson was having a $10 tub bath, Praiseworthy and Jack were plucking opportunity from the air. They put up a sign that said, "Free haircuts, miners only." The end. Well, at least the end of that chapter. And so now we're going to go on to Father's Old Gray Whiskers, the song that told me that for sure I was absolutely right, or the book was absolutely right, that this was absolutely the story we had to read today. Thanks for joining me, guys. Here we go.
I have a She wakes up in the morning, eating shredded wheat. They're always in the way. The cows eat them for hay. They hide the dirt on daddy's shirt. They're always in the way. They're always in the way. The cows eat them for hay. They hide the dirt on daddy's shirt. They're always.
Happy 'cause there's no more rain. Ooh, yeah. Summer's here. Ooh, yeah. Here come my cousins.
You-hoo.
They drove all the way You-hoo. From Maine. Summer's here.
Oh.
We've been waiting oh so
time is finally here.
Splishing and splashing.
Yeah.
Marco Polo in the pool.
La, 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 la,
summer's
la,
here.
La, la, la.
Check out this fashion. Bare feet and shorts. We're keeping cool.
Joe cool.
There's no school.
No school.
We got tons of time to play. Sunshine on a clear, hot, perfect day.
Everybody's happy, 'cause summertime is finally here.
Everybody's out in the sunshine. Everybody's having a good time. Everything is great, 'cause summer's here.
Well, folks, summertime is really here. It really is. Starting tomorrow, tomorrow or Monday, somewhere around there, depending on where you are in the planet, we are entering summertime, and I am so excited for that. So I hope that you're going to get outside and get some sunshine or some rain showers or whatever it happens to be doing. I know I've been meeting frogs and woodpeckers, and the baby birds are flying around already, and it's just so exciting out there. And that's why I just think it's such a wonderful world, and I'm so curious about everything. And there's so much to learn. Every day I learn stuff, and I'm having so much fun, you guys. And I'm especially having fun coming in here and doing doing this radio show. So thank you to Central Vermont Community Radio and the team of people who are keeping the station going. And I am on that team, and we are all on that team together. And if you want to join the team, please go online to WGDR.org. Of course, there's a big fundraiser going on. And so grown-ups out there, if you have a little cash that you can send GDR's way to support children's programming and all the other great stuff that's on the air here, please, please do that. And thank you for joining me. This is Amy's Kids Show. We had a great story today about some wonderful role models. I love the way Praiseworthy and Jack just handle these situations that come their way, right? I mean, here they are landing off a whale boat they've been on for 5 months, going around South America. They land in San Francisco, and you know they need to come up with a whole bunch of money to get to where they're going to even begin their journey. They haven't even really started their job yet there of finding gold to save their aunt. But here they are. They show up, and what do? Well, they put their best foot forward, right? They take the time to wash behind their ears, and thank heaven for those role models out there who are showing us the right way, right? How to take care of ourselves and put our best foot forward and wash behind our ears. Or I know in my case, my dad really helped me learn to floss my teeth. I got really good at it. Thank heaven, because I have teeth that are great, and I'm so happy for that. And so all those role models in our lives, you know, whether they're fathers or whoever, right, that we happen to meet or see, our brains are learning from them, whether they're the good guys or the bad guys in the movie we're watching. You know, we're still learning how they're handling situations, and are they putting their best foot forward? Are they greeting the world with curiosity and an open heart and looking for opportunity, right? The way that Jack and Praiseworthy did. I hope so. And if your role models or the people you're seeing on the screen or in real life, if they're not doing that, if they're not showing you the right way, then change the channel, folks. Or maybe do like that dad in that song. Throw it out the window. No, don't throw it out the window. I'm only kidding. Just turn it off. Turn it off. Save electricity. Go outside and play. Thanks for joining me for Amy's Kids Show. Happy summer, everybody.